We've all done it. Stock our fridge with leafy greens and good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice quality nutrition for the convenience of takeout. Keep your body and mind nourished all day with a whole body meal shake from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But the best part? It actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood-packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai, to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you've got endless ways to personalize your Kachava. Whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee, with every 2 scoops of Kachava, you're getting 85-plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags with code NEWS at Kachava.com. That's 30% off for a limited time at kachava.com, code NEWS.
This podcast is part of the Neverland Network, where faith meets video games, movies, and fun. Find more shows like this at neverlandpodcast.com. By the pricking of my thumb, the Fandom Nexus this way comes.
From days long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
The dream that came through a million years, that lived on through all the tears.
It came here, the Fandom Nexus.
Fabulous secret powers were revealed to our host as he plugged in his microphone.
I have a podcast!
Here he is, your Spider-Pan, Jeremy.
Hello, hello. Yes, I'm back again for some October fun with you. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Fandom Nexus. We're going to have some fun today. We're kicking off October. Well, I guess technically last week was October too. But we're really kicking off October as Disney Plus has brought on Something Wicked This Way Comes from Ray Bradbury, a book that became a movie back in the really early 80s. And it's on Disney Plus. I sat down and I watched it. Although I have not read the book, so hopefully while we're recording, I'm trying to make arrangements for Jonathan Johnson of Diz Radio to join me to talk about the book, and hopefully we'll have that arranged tonight. I will try to make sure that gets to you in some fashion before I talk about it. I'd rather have him on there as an expert who's actually read the book. It would be a lot better to hear from him. So that's the plans for the day. Also, Peanuts has hit 75 years. We'll give a little tribute to Diane Keaton passing away and kick off October, which, you know, normally, you know, the intro, remember we used to do the Scary Land, I guess it was. I would do I had an Evil Land I even did one time. Y'all remember that? Anyone who's been around long enough where the show got taken over by an evil ghost host. Yeah, I try to bring some story into the podcast, and some of my guests that I had on at the time weren't quite keeping up with what was happening and were confused by what I was doing, because you couldn't tell the difference until I added the vocal effects later in post-production. But I've done some crazy things for October. This time, I'm winging it. We actually have right now, if you happen to go and join the Fandom Nexus group on Facebook, I have a poll going in there where people are entering in movies that they like to watch every Halloween. And I want to do a top 10, maybe a top 5, but I'm getting quite the long list, and I need everybody to come in and vote. And you can vote more than one time. Vote for all your favorite movies that you definitely have to watch every October. So we can get I want some clear winners. And right now, there's a lot of a tie going on a big group, but there are a few movies that are standing out right now. But I would like to see some of these other movies get a little bit more love that some people have already listed. I mean, that list is growing, and part of me almost wants to just list every movie that you've got out there, but I'll maybe give special attention to the ones that were top vote getters, but maybe mention all the movies that people mentioned, you know, brought onto the list. So yeah, the list has gotten quite long, but I need people to just vote on that list in the group, and we'll probably get to that next week and share that with you. And we'll talk about some of our favorite movies to watch every October. The rules is it has to be a PG-13 or under, and there's no nudity. I mean, if there's a little bit of language, that's fine, but not excessive amount of language or gore and that kind of thing, but maybe a little scary, kind of fun. So older movies tend to work a lot better, but there are some family friendly ish, you know, like Something Wicked This Way Comes. You could sit with the family and watch that one. Although, I, you know, people tell me when they were kids, the movie terrified them. I didn't think it was terrifying when I was watching it. But I'll tell you more thoughts about the movie when we get to actually talking about the movie later on in the show. But for starters, let's get into, you know, what have I been watching? Nothing really specific, but other than that movie. But what have I been playing? And this is kind of a big deal, because if you happen to follow on the Neverland official gaming channel, that is where I've actually been streaming. And I do a thing. I've been doing it now for, I guess, 5 years, because I started it during COVID, because I was stuck sitting at home a lot. And I did a thing I call Scare Play. And Scare Play, I would sit there and I would play some sort of scary or survival horror game. I will note to you that these games sometimes do have language and things like that. You know, video games are a lot more mature than a lot of people expect, I guess, if you don't play a lot of games. But they're, you know, starting to have a lot more language and violence and stuff in some of these games. So I'll warn you ahead of time that some of the games I play might have some language and things. Okay, so if you are concerned about that, then I have said something. Previous years, I've played Alien Isolation. Really enjoyed that. I played The Evil Within. The Evil Within 2, I've actually posted. I played it a while back, but I've actually posted videos of that early on. I've played the original Alan Wake, but right now I'm playing Alan Wake 2, and I've been streaming it every time I play. Hopefully I'm going to have time to be able to play today or tomorrow, but of course I've got to record the show. I've got to edit the show, and I want to get this out to you, so I might not get a chance to play. So I have a hard time scheduling, like, okay, here's the time I'm going to play. Come along. So you just have to kind of get on YouTube and find me when I'm about to go live. But it'll usually be in the evenings, Saturdays or Sunday. Sunday I had to go like early. Saturday it'll be during the day. But like in the evenings, probably about 6:30 or so, I should be hopefully playing. Except for right now it's like 7:10 and I'm recording this podcast. So just keep an eye out for that and everything, and come along and watch me play. I try to talk my way through it and everything. I got to warn you, the first couple of hours that I've played on Alan Wake 2, there is a first you're playing as a guy who's about to be a victim, and it is a character from the first game, and there is some nudity and male frontal nudity that I was trying to avoid by having somebody stand in the way of it. But I had to examine his body, and I thought I was done examining the body in the first thing, but in the second you're going to the morgue and you have to examine his body again, and so there he is, and he's just there. I thought I was going to get in trouble with YouTube, but so far YouTube has not complained at me. But you have been warned. And it was a bit much. I did not expect to have that and everything, you know, but, you know, dead body. And he's just laying there and he's not wearing nothing. So that's, but I overall have been enjoying Alan Wake 2. It ties very nicely into the original game, also into the game Control. Remedy has a shared universe, and it's really kind of fun to watch this come together. And it's been very fun having Sam Lake, who writes the stories of these games and develops these games, and was the original face for Max Payne. He's playing a character very similar to Max Payne. And even at one point when he's in a live action segment, he actually does the Max Payne face. And even at one point, his digital version, when he's as Alex Casey, comes out and he's wearing like the tie and wearing like the same thing Max Payne wore in the first Max Payne game. And I've gotten a real kick out of that. And they've been saying that they are remaking Max Payne, and I'll bet they'll try to connect it into this universe somehow or another. So looking forward to that in the future. But yeah, so that's what I've been playing. And now let's move on to something new going on.
Spanning the Disney and geek universe to bring you the best in comics, toys, movies, and entertainment. This is news from around Neverland.
So Bleeding Cool has reported, now let's think back here, the 1980s animated series Thundar the Barbarian. Did you ever happen to watch that? Well, Bleeding Cool says that they're just getting its first ever comic book from Dynamite, written by Jason Aaron with art by Cooper Bale. This is really reviving the 1980s classic. And this was actually a series created by Steve Gerber, Jack Kirby, and Alex Toth. Yes, that's right, Jack Kirby. So the story unveils Thundar's origin, his meeting with Ariel in Ookla, if I can say that right, and the Sun Sword's first appearance. That's the story that's going to be in the comics. This is an epic adventure. There's going to be some iconic villains like Gemini and Mind Doc, and new variant covers by top artists. This is coming up very, very soon. I'm interested to read it. I've watched some of the cartoon. I haven't watched the entirety of the cartoon. I think it might be available because I believe this was a Hanna-Barbera, I think. And so it might be available out there to view. It might even be on HBO Max right now. I don't know. I would like to actually sit and watch the entire series. I don't think it wrapped up the entire story. because this was a post-apocalyptic world. I think they'd even done something bad to the moon or something like that. But it's everything's. If you're a fan of He-Man, you would enjoy Thundari the Barbarian. It's very, very similar in vein. But yeah, definitely something to work looking forward to. All right, so Walt Disney Studios has placed a bet on Impossible Creatures. This is written by an Oxford professor named Catherine Rundle. It is a series of books. It's a fantasy series. And the first two books are being adapted into screenplays right now by the author. So Disney has got the rights now to release these as a series of films. I think we've got at least it was going to be a trilogy, but it became a 5-novel saga. So this could be a franchise that they could continue on for a while. I had never heard of this until this news had dropped. So we've at least got two of them prepared to go and become movies. If it does well, then I'm sure it'll be continued. And since she's doing the adaptation, I'm sure it'll be a lot better than, you know, Disney has a habit of, I don't know, we call it Disneyfying it in their adaptation, or they go a very light version, which might have been what hurt the John Carter movie. They should have called it John Carter of Mars and tied a little bit maybe better back to the book source it was from. Now, my wife did read the books and did enjoy the books. I thought that was a pretty good movie, too, but they didn't market it very well. If you get a chance to watch John Carter, it was an entertaining movie. And I think some of the concepts you had from that old book was some of what you would see later with Superman, with the powers that John Carter gets on Mars, because his mass is different being from Earth and not compared to being on Mars. And so he's stronger. He can leap long distances. And it's very much that early Superman before he became a flying superhero. He was leaping over buildings, you know, leaping over with tall bounds, that kind of thing. But that was the early version of Superman. So I think there was some inspiration, perhaps. I can't confirm that, but I think there's some inspiration. But anyways, not here to talk about John Carter. So Impossible Creatures, Bob Iger, when he read it, he says that it needed to be, it belonged here at Disney for when they did this. So I'm expecting this to be an interesting series. I've never gone through the books. I'm kind of curious. I want to check it out. But apparently it's been very popular. Maybe at least in Britain. I don't know if in the States, if kids are reading this, hopefully kids are reading books. I mean, they're on their phone most of the time anywhere I see, but yeah, so this very, very interesting. I'm kind of curious what's going on. Also from Bleeding Cool, Greg Wiseman and Tad Stones they're the creators between Gargoyles and Darkwing Duck, but there's a crossover planned in 2026 in comic book form. So this is going to be co-written by, of course, Wiseman and Tad Stones. Greg Wiseman has been a guest. I think Tad Stones I've had on the show before, too. I'd have to go back through my history. I remember talking to Greg Wiseman. He's creative Gargoyles. He was working on the Nickelodeon Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles CGI animated. He was writing for that. He wrote The Spectacular Spider-Man. He's done a lot of different stuff. And Tad Stones, I mean, he's had his fingers in a lot of stuff with the Disney Afternoon. But a crossover between Gargoyles and Darkwing Duck, something that we've probably wanted since we were kids, right? In the early 90s, this is something we've wanted, I'm sure. Probably even if we didn't think we wanted it, it's something we knew we want now. And it is happening in a comic book. It's coming out in 2026. If you can get it to your local comic shop and put in some sort of reservation, you might want to do it, because it's probably going to sell out. I can almost guarantee it. It's going to sell out for probably, even if not kids, us adults are going to go crazy. Here's something else. So Arrow Video, and you go to arrowvideo.com and you can go and order your set here. There's going to be a complete limited edition Blu-ray 4K Ultra exclusive of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles trilogy, with lots of bonus extras, like little miniature versions of the posters, trading cards, you name it, all kinds of different stuff. A 4K restoration, high definition restorations, director's commentaries for all three films, new cast and crew interviews, fixed up the audio. What I have not really gotten confirmed is if you can see the deleted scenes back in there, because there's a lot of things that were deleted from that original movie that I would really like to be able to see. And I would even like to see a director's cut where maybe they can put those back in. But that is due to come out, I believe. Oh, I should have kept the screen up, but I believe it's going to be here over the next couple of months. And you can order yourself a copy. I believe you can even go along and order yourself a copy on Amazon right now. Put your reservation down. I'm planning on buying this for somebody for Christmas, so I need to go and do that myself. And at some point, maybe somebody will buy it for me, but I'll have to get myself that set as well. So here's something. I mean, we don't really cover Disney anymore, but I had to bring this up. A woman passed away. She had a medical problem. I don't know if they've released exactly what all had happened. She was in her 60s. She was on the Haunted Mansion ride in Disneyland. And when she came out of it, they had to administer CPR. She was not conscious. They took her to a hospital where she did pass away. And from everything, even with Disney saying, and all of us who've ridden on there would know that it's not a fast moving ride. There's nothing really in there that should have caused this to happen. It sounds like it was just kind of a health concern. Now, I'm sure plenty of Disney fans like, oh, well, there was room for 1,000 and now we have some. And this is going to add to the mystique of the ride. OK, obviously, people are going to be like, "Ooh, there's somebody who actually died in here." But because there's all kinds of fictitious stories of people died or accidents or whatever that goes along. And so now we have a legit person who's passed away. And so I'm sure Disney fans are going to be making that the focal point of this. But let's just say, hey, this was a sad thing. This poor lady, you know, her family's going to miss her. Let's try to focus on it in that this was kind of a sad thing that happened. Right. But I thought I'd report because it kind of struck me. It's like, oh, that's terrible when someone just, you know, is having fun at Disney and then dies. So. Now, before we dive into our dark carnival, let's pause and pay tribute to Diane Keaton, who passed away on October 11th, 2025 at age 79. Now, Diane Keaton was one of Hollywood's most distinct voices. She was funny, awkwardly elegant, deeply emotional, and actually got an Oscar for being in Annie Hall and gave an unforgettable performances in The Godfather Trilogy, The First Wives Club, Something's Gotta Give, many others. I think even Father of the Bride. I think that's where I've mainly seen her in. I don't know if I've seen a lot of her films. Colleagues and fans alike have been pouring out love and memories. Goldie Hawn called her a complete original. Woody Allen described her presence as brilliant and singular. Now, she wasn't just a star. She was a personality, a risk taker, and she's someone who wore suits and ties, hats and odd combinations, and made it feel like poetry. So she'll be missed for her voice, her laugh, and her way of making every line feel lived in. Now I want to take a quick moment to talk to you about Dubby. If you go to NeverlandPodcast.com, that is the home for the Neverland Network of podcasts, which includes this one, Watching Movies with My Pastor, the Mighty Marvel Tooncast, but yes, it is coming back. Well, I keep saying it. We haven't done it yet, but it is coming back. Also, you can find the sermons from Moment of Truth Bible Baptist Church because I run that as well. So I just put it into the network. And of course, those are sermons from Pastor Philip Coons, who does the podcast Watching Movies with My Pastor on there. NeverlandPodcast.com is where you find it all. And that's also where you'll find a large logo for Dubby. Now, if you happen to be a gamer and you need some energy, but you do not want the jitters, Dubby has drink mixes. You mix it with water. You can buy bottles. You can buy all kinds of different flavors. Mix it with water. Get all the vitamins and minerals you need for a good burst of energy without the jitters, because you're not going to get all that caffeine and all that garbage that those little 5-hour energies are giving you, right? That, once again, is Dubby. You can go to Dubby.gg, use the discount code Neverland, and get a nice discount, and I get a little kickback from that, so you're helping out the show. Now, 75 years ago, Charles Schulz introduced us to Peanuts. I mean, that's Charlie Brown, Snoopy, Lucy, Linus, the whole gang. That first strip appeared in 1950. So now since then, Peanuts has become woven into pop culture. You've got Sunday comics, there's TV specials, there have been movies, there's merchandise, there's holiday traditions. And the charm of it is all in its simplicity. I mean, there's kids having big thoughts and adults with bigger insecurities. That's basically what they are. They're all wrapped in their daily life. And Schulz's arts was deceptively simple, but emotionally rich. Now, over the decades, we've got Charlie Brown Christmas. We've got A Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. We've got Snoopy Come Home. All kinds of them. I even was just watching You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, a musical one, which I managed to get off of Amazon for free because I answered a survey for somebody. I forgot even who I did the survey for. But I mean, there's so many of the TV specials for all kinds of different things. Valentine's Day, for Easter, for not even holidays. There's stuff about baseball. There has been series. We even had a voice of Charlie Brown, who did the animated series way back in the 80s, come on the show a long time ago. I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but it's a phenom. It really is. So these specials, I mean, they broke ground in animation. They use jazz scores, expressive minimalism, and timing in silence. So now Peanuts is more than just nostalgia. I mean, it is a legacy. There's new strips, new shows, and collaborations going on with fashion houses. There's theme park events. The characters are still resonating because they just feel real to us. Charlie Brown has hope and he's got optimism despite everything that goes wrong for him. Snoopy's got this crazy imagination. He flies around on a doghouse. You got Lucy in her bossiness and thinking she's a psychologist trying to diagnose everybody's problems. And I think we all know somebody like that. Maybe if you don't know someone like that, you probably are someone like that. I mean, they're just really parts of all of us. So, I mean, we've all got great memories and I'm a big fan of Peanuts. I always have been. And I mean, when they did that live action, well, not live action, sorry, computer animated movie. If you heard me talk about it on the show, I was like, oh, I hope this is going to be good because, you know, Charles Schulz was no longer alive. But his family really was behind making sure that movie was done right. And that movie was done perfectly well. Now, Apple has the rights to Peanuts and they're making some new things. And I haven't really gotten to see a lot of the new stuff on there. Hopefully they're keeping the legacy pretty well alive. I probably should watch it, but I know I prefer the old classic Charles Schulz. So I'm a little nervous to watch some of these, you know, make sure Apple's doing fair by all the characters and stuff like that. But, you know, that's kind of the way it all comes together. But yeah, Peanuts, 75 years. Can you believe that? And I even remember a Mid-Continent library around here that they had some collections of the original strips and books. And I was checking them out when I was doing a community theater show and I'd be in between stuff. But, you know, I was reading it backstage. In between my sections, we were doing You Can't Take It With You. And my part, actually, I was a smaller part in that one. I forgot the name of the character that I was playing. Donald, I believe. So I only had a few appearances. So I had some time backstage to sit there, you know, with it got a little light. And I was reading that. Really, really enjoyed it. I'd love to get a copy of those. I bet there's a complete collection. But the old stuff was really great. And you could see the style of art changing through the years. As he would change up the look of the characters and even as he got a little older and I don't remember if he had Parkinson's or what caused he had a little bit of a shake. I need to take a drink of my hot drink there for my throat. But, you know, he had a little bit of a jagged in his lines that he just couldn't help. He had a little bit of a tremor as he was drawing, but still that just added to the charm and made the look of the characters distinct. So it's definitely it's got its place in our lives, in culture. It has formed so much. It's been even goofed on by Robot Chicken with it's pretty funny. They did a horror movie of the Great Pumpkin. It's, you know, it's a little racy, I will say, at points and everything. If you've never seen it, you can probably look it up. But the idea is fairly funny of the Great Pumpkin being this big monster that shows up and starts trying to eat the children. So it's darkly funny, okay? Trust me, it's darkly funny, and I have enjoyed that. But yeah, so Peanuts, 75 years. That is really something to think about, and we see ourselves a lot in these characters, as it was mentioned when I was, you know, when I was reading here. And I also appreciate the story that the little red-haired girl actually represents the girl who really did break Charles Schulz's heart. And there's been different articles published where he would talk about, because he developed, like, Charlie Brown as a character he had kind of worked on when he was young. And the worse kind of day that Charles Schulz was having, the more he'd really do things to poor old Charlie Brown when he would draw little things when he was a kid. And that kind of continued on. Charlie Brown really just couldn't win. All these bad things would happen, but he never always fully gave up hope. There's times he got really depressed, but he'd still have this optimism. And when he'd think something might actually go right, he'd get a little excited. And he never gave up playing baseball, even though they never won a single game. Well, except for they won whenever Charlie Brown wasn't playing. That does happen in one of the movies. I think it's A Boy Named Charlie Brown, where he's too depressed to come out and play. And I think, yeah, Linus comes by to cheer him up. And one of the things he says that doesn't help is like, hey, we actually won our game today when you weren't pitching. But I don't blame Charlie Brown for losing those baseball games because the rest of his team were failing him big time all over the place. So it's not all on his pitching, clearly. If you've watched the way Lucy can't seem to catch a ball and yeah, it's all kinds of things going on with that. So, but those has brought us joy and laughter for years. Even after Charles Schulz had to retire and then died soon afterwards, the legacy lives on. I think they're still printing the comics in some newspapers, wherever there's still a newspaper existing. I'm sure you can go online and find a lot of stuff. I actually, on Facebook and Instagram, I follow the Charles Schulz Museum and also an official Peanuts page, so I get to read some strips Really, really great stuff. There's been so many different characters that have meant so much to us. And I always would like to have had a live action movie to see them maybe middle school, a little older, because I always kind of figured Marcy really was sweet on Charlie Brown. But Peppermint Patty always got in the way. Am I the only one that was always thinking that? I always thought Charlie Brown and Marcy would be a nice little pairing as they got older. You know, that it was going to happen because, you know, he was never going to get the red haired girl. He needed to let that go. Although there is. I think it's called Your First Kiss, Charlie Brown. But there's like a homecoming football game. They're supposed to be like first graders or something. But they're playing like high school football and having homecoming. And Charlie Brown has to be the escort for Heather. They gave her the name Heather, which is my wife's name. That's kind of fun. But that's the little red hair girl's name. Ended up being Heather in there. And he had to escort her. And he got a kiss from her. And so he kind of won a little bit. And I do also appreciate that they did use the little red hair girl. I don't think they gave her a name. I haven't watched it in a while. But that movie, the computer animated movie that was put out, that she appreciated him, his efforts to always try to help her and do things. And, you know, she was observing him and seeing all his good qualities that he didn't always see in himself. And that's part of what made that movie great. But so Peanuts, 75 years. So, yeah, it predates me by at least 25 years, you know, 27 years, really. Because, I started in 1950. I was born in 77. So 27 years later. So I've missed like half of its run. Well, a lot more than half of its run. I missed 27 years of it, but I've gotten to read some of it. But yeah, if you get a chance, go to a library and see if they have some books of it in collections and check it out and read and just enjoy some of the early stuff. And let's just celebrate 75 years of Peanuts.
Are you a fan of Adventures in Odyssey, Lamplighter Theater, or Jonathan Park? Want to join other fans for discussions or behind-the-scenes info about these shows? Or maybe you're looking for more great audio drama to listen to with your family. Do you enjoy hearing exclusive interviews with the cast and crew of your favorite shows? Then Audio Theater Central is the podcast for you. I'm J.D. Sutter. Since 2010, Audio Theater Central has been exploring the family-friendly audio drama world through news, reviews, and interviews. Join me and a rotating cast of co-hosts each month for another episode featuring the latest updates, in-depth reviews of new releases, and conversations with the actors, writers, directors, sound designers, and composers who create your favorite audio dramas. And maybe we'll introduce you to some great shows you've never heard of before. Find us at audiotheatercentral.com or in your favorite podcast app. That's audiotheatercentral.com.
Come on in! We're nightmares on the best part of my day!
Hellfire storms are coming! An electric storm to clean your streets and wash away your troubles!
For every heart, there exists a wish.
You ever play the numbers, Mr. Holloway?
Me? Never take risks.
For every soul, there burns a desire.
Boy, he's up.
Always was.
It smells to me like we're gonna have visitors.
But never whisper your dreams, for someone might be listening. And for every wish, there will be a price.
Yes.
For every desire, there will be a cost.
My name is Mr. Dark. I advise you to respect it.
Dad, please be careful.
Will?
These boys I'm looking for, perhaps you know them?
fine boy. Fine. Both of them quite a credit to this little town, if you want to know the truth.
I do want to know the truth, sir. And the truth is that you are lying.
I am pricking up my thumb. Something wicked this way, come.
Then rang the bells, both loud and deep. God is not dead, nor doth he sleep.
Where do you come from? The dust. Where do you go to? The grave.
Yes. We are the hungry ones. Your torments call us like dogs in the night. And we do feed. And feed well. But tell me where the boys are hiding. And I can make you young again.
Ray Bradbury's fantasy tale of light and darkness is getting closer. Something wicked this way comes.
Okay, so a slight change of plan. I was going to have Jonathan Johnson of Diz Radio join me to talk about the book by Ray Bradbury, Something Wicked This Way Comes. But as it turns out, he's been having some struggles with work, people not showing up. So he's been having to work late. And so he wasn't able to make it. So I don't have an expert on the book, although I tried to get me some information on the book by trying to listen to an audiobook. And what I actually managed to get from the library was a 2-hour audio drama version. And I did listen to that, and it was a little different from the movie. So I guess hopefully I have a little bit of insight. But before I actually get into that, and I am joined now by my wife, Heather, the bio nerd.
Hello.
So she watched the movie with me.
Yep.
So we can discuss the movie. But before I get into that, in between times of recording the first half of the show and this one, Drew Struzan passed away. Now, do you know who that is?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, we've got his artwork right next to, wait a minute.
Oh, yes. I saw that. He did like movie posters.
Yeah. I don't think he did the original Star Wars one, but I think he did at least Empire and Return of the Jedi. I think he did paint those and did like the
Indiana Jones.
The Indiana Jones. But basically, if Spielberg did it or if Lucas did it, he generally probably did the poster for it.
No.
But I think he even did Back to the Future. I mean, so much kind of stuff. But he passed away. He's been battling an illness for a long time. I've followed his Facebook page for a long time, and he hasn't really interacted with anybody in like years. But he's had his family or whatever, or people in charge of his press kind of doing things for him and just sharing. And they really turn off comments anyway. So they haven't really interacted. They just every once in a while they share like some stuff that wasn't used and share some of his artwork and everything. But he passed away, and I fear we better acknowledge that because he's had a heck of an impact. And I'm still very sad, actually, that in the modern era, they do photo collage kind of things and digital stuff, and they don't really get the artwork that we used to appreciate when we'd get like oil paintings that were posters and they were really cool.
And the movie posters aren't like what they were.
Yeah, they're not. I mean, I don't dislike them now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, there was something special.
They're just different.
They were special.
It just wasn't like they were.
It was nice getting the prequel trilogy was all Drew Struzan, and we used to have those posters up, but I don't have enough room on my walls. I'm considering that even the original trilogy posters that are on this wall over here might eventually go down if I buy any more Aerith artwork, because there's some really good fan artists, and I kind of like this one guy's art, and I was like, gee, if I wanted to buy it, where would I put it? It's like, well, I guess I could put it there, or I have more
room
for more toys.
You would really take down Star Wars for Aerith?
Maybe I would. Disney's kind of spoiled some Star Wars for me a little bit. I still have some Star Wars stuff around here, though. I don't know. It's really good fan art, and I kind of want to get some, but I just don't know where I would put it. That's all. So you could put them up in your office. These are actually your posters.
And they are.
Yeah. I elected to get a bowling ball. I got a Boba Fett bowling
ball. I did want another bowling ball.
I got one, and I'm not bowling with it because it's got Boba Fett on it and an Imperial Walker on the other side. It's very cool. So that was my prize. For doing a Star Wars bowling league we had, and you decided you wanted the posters.
And I got a stand-up Darth Vader, which I think
we gave it away to Philip.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have room for it and everything. Philip really appreciates it. He's got his Empire Strikes Back. The Empire has struck his bathroom. So he's really decked the whole place out. So
anyway.
But anyways, so I'm going to add some details onto some of the notes that I had dug up here. But so Ray Bradbury actually first conceived the story from a 1958 screenplay called Black Ferris, but he wasn't able to get funding. And so he adapted it into a 1962 novel. Now, Jonathan has helped me out, actually, with some of my information, because he actually made this post. By the way, he posted it on Diz Radio, but he shared it over into our Fandom Nexus public group, which, by the way, if you're not part of the public group, come and join us on Facebook. We do have a lot of fun. We can interact. I've got a poll going in there that's about what's going to be coming up in an upcoming show, about what kind of scary movies you like to watch this season that are somewhat to a degree of family friendly, where PG-13 or under, so it cannot have any gore or nudity in there. But come and vote for your favorites or add your favorite to the list. But if you add your movie to the list, please make sure you do vote for it, because it doesn't get a vote just because it's in there. And I do want to have, I want some clear winners if I can help it. But right now, everybody, I've got a lot of people adding their movie and everybody's either not voting it, or maybe they're only, everything's getting like one vote and it's getting spread out because there's such a division of different movies. And I may have to just tell everybody's movies. I don't know how I'm going to make this work, but I would like a clear top five. It would be nice, but come in and join in that. But something that I don't know where Jonathan managed to dig up everything, but he knows a lot about a bunch of different movies that you've never even heard of half the time. But see, before it was a spooky book or a creepy movie, Ray Bradbury's Something Wicked This Way Comes almost had a much lighter song and dance beginning. Imagine this, when after being totally mesmerized by Gene Kelly in the classic musical Singin' in the Rain, which Bradbury called the greatest musical ever. I wouldn't call it the greatest, but it is great.
I love it.
It is great. The legendary sci-fi author was inspired to write his tale of a sinister carnival as a screenplay. So Bradbury actually showed the script. Now, this is the one that we were just talking about on the notes of what I dug up. Black Ferris. Ferris, of course, spelled like a Ferris wheel. So that was apparently his connection. So, but Gene Kelly was so impressed that he wanted to star in it, and he envisioned the dark fantasy as his next big picture. Cue the spooky, disappointing music right here, apparently. So sadly, when Gene Kelly tried to raise the funds in 1958, no one bit. So the project just died right there. It was just dead. So Ray Bradbury took it. What's the quote of he's that's apparently saying? I don't know how this is figurative or a real quote, but he says, fine, if you don't want the movie, you'll get the novel. So he wrote the screenplay into the 1962 book. And so now in 1983 is when we get Disney's adaptation. And of course, you know, I've got all the information on that one, everything. But let's go. You know, the novel tells the stories of two boys. It's Will and Jim, which I can't think of their last names. Jim's last name was Nightshade, though. That one stands out. And then Will is like Hollowell or something. Will Hollowell. Yeah. And so they live in a small town. I think it mentions in the book it was like Iowa or Ohio or something. I can't remember. I'm sorry. See if Jonathan was here. Midwestern. Kind of very northern Midwestern type of thing. On this one particular night, a strange carnival shows up, and everybody gets temptations in there. There's time bending and eventually a confrontation with darkness embodied in Mr. Dark, the carnival sinister ringmaster. There's a lot of metaphor going on in the writing. It's a very small town Americana. There's fear and longing and the bittersweet passage of youth toward age. That's nearly everything I can say about the book, because I haven't read the book. And like I said, I tried to find it at the library, like an audio book I could listen to at work. And all I found was like a 2-hour radio drama. And I even had trouble with the library was supposed to send the audio file to this other app on my phone. It didn't quite work that way, but I could use the library's website. And I was able to listen to that way while I was working this week. So I was able to listen. And there is some differences between what the radio drama did, which Ray Bradbury directly worked with. The radio drama, and we'll get into it here, that the screenplay for the movie was actually written by Ray Bradbury, but there was some creative tension. Okay, so there was a little bit of a problem, which is why there's a lot of difference. But also, compared to a lot of the other Disney fare, it was fairly faithful to the source material compared to something like The Black Cauldron.
Yeah, you know? So, we've already talked about that.
Yeah, so there was a difference. Okay, so it's directed by Jack Clayton, produced by Peter Douglas, with a screenplay by Ray Bradbury. The cast included Jason Robards as Charles Holloway. That's the name. Now, the funny thing is, okay, so Jason Robards is the father of Will. Jason Robards is kind of an older guy on this, and they kind of lean on the fact that he's aging. Yeah. He's only supposed to be 51. Okay, I'm 48. Maybe I am old, but I don't feel that old, dadgummit. I'm only 3 years away from 51.
Well, you also have to remember, too, like at the time that this would have been cast, you know, people had children younger, you know, they would have gotten married younger. If you had waited until your 30s or something to have children,
he was supposed to be 39 when his son was born.
That would have seemed very old.
Yeah. So he was 39 because he got married at 36, had his son at 39 is what the book says.
Yeah.
But still 51, he shouldn't be old, wrinkled. It's almost like, okay, in Jaws, and this has always bugged me, the mother of the little boy that gets eaten.
She looks so much older in the movie.
Grandmother.
Yeah. Well, okay, now you're talking to a
and at the same time, you get
here,
a 20-something year to play a teenager. You know?
A woman here who my mom in her 40s had all white hair.
Yeah, well.
So
I don't think she probably looked quite as old as what
happened.
She does now.
No, I guess people were like, well, are you Heather's grandma? And is that, no, I'm not. I'm her mom. So, but she had children late, and that was, you know, that was an infertility issue. But yeah, there was a lot of, I mean, not to get into too personal stuff, but, you know, even having children as late as they did, even though they adopted, there was still people that kind of gave them raspberries about it.
So it also stars Jonathan Pryce as Mr. Dark. Now, you've seen him as a James Bond villain in Tomorrow Never Dies. He's been in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. I think there was something else we spotted him in once. He's been in a lot of stuff. Diane Ladd, which I don't know that I recognized her. And then Pam Grier. I think I know who that is. I think Pam Grier was the Sand Witch. And yes, I said Sand Witch. I thought it was kind of funny in the book. The radio drama that I kind of got. Because they mentioned some sand and stuff.
They don't really introduce her in the movie, but that's kind of maybe
but
jumping.
But she's supposed to, and she's very pretty.
Yes,
but she's supposed to be the most beautiful woman, and she's from actually supposed to be an ancient Egyptian.
Mm-hmm.
That she's been around for a very long time.
But they did have a very nice, very, you know, dark, mysterious, alluring, you know, like very feel to her presentation and her and everything. Yeah. So it worked well.
Yeah, she did a good job. And then Royal Dano, who I recognized him, like I've seen him in some stuff, but Disney fans will also recognize him as being the voice of Abraham Lincoln in the moments with Mr. Lincoln. He's voiced that and does a really good job, but he plays Joe Fury, who sells lightning rods. And I when I see him, I was like, I think I have seen him in some old movies before. He was pretty popular. And I think he did some westerns and stuff.
He looked familiar to me too, but I couldn't place where.
And I feel like they gave him more to do in the movie than what at least the radio version had.
I liked him in the movie.
He was cool because he
was great
Royal
Dano,
you know.
It. Yeah.
So he was pretty cool. Music was by James Horner. There was actually, after some test screening, the original score had been replaced and they brought James Horner in. And James Horner, of course, Braveheart, Titanic. I mean,
James Horner,
man. Yeah. He's one of the top, like, you know, so it runs at about 95 minutes, was made in a budget for about 19 to 20 million and grossed about 8.4 million domestically. This is where if we were on Retro Rewind, they would play the little sound effect saying that, you know, this movie crashed and burned. This was during Disney's era where they were trying to do a slightly darker tone of some things. And they did Return to Oz. They did The Watcher in the Woods. They did The Black Cauldron. They were trying to be able to expand their audience a little bit. And audiences really didn't go for it.
I wonder what it's made since because, you know, I mean, like sometimes things that flop at the box office later become kind of a favorite. I really liked this movie. I really did.
Yeah, it was fun. I have a couple of problems with it. Once we get through some of the production, we'll talk about our thoughts a little bit more. It was filmed in Vermont and the Walt Disney Studios in Burbank, California. There was creative tensions between Bradbury and the director, and Clayton clashed over rewrites and control. So Disney had some interventions after test screenings. Of course, the score was replaced. There was reshoots. The original editor was filed. And after re-editing, it pushed back the release by 5 months and added another $4 to $5 million to the costs. The film was underperforming, of course, at the box office. As we mentioned, critics praised the visuals and fidelity to Bradbury's tone, though others felt it strayed or lost focus. And Roger Ebert praised its tone and adaptation. And the town that they had there, and I guess it was probably a town in Vermont.
It was a nice town.
It was really nice. Yeah. And it did have a little bit of that hocus pocusy feel of being this nice little small town in the kind of north, but it felt more Midwestern than Hocus Pocus does.
Yeah.
Hocus Pocus kind of leans in that East Coast thing, but this felt very, very Midwestern. For years, the movie has rarely been seen, but here in 2025, it's finally been added to Disney Plus. So people like me that have heard that this movie exists finally got a chance to sit and watch it.
Okay. I'm glad they did. We would have missed it.
Yeah.
You know,
because I've been like, well, you know, Jonathan's been telling me, oh, man, you got to see this movie. He watches it like every year. He loves this movie and the book. And so he's been telling me to watch it. And I was like, OK, finally, I get a chance to check this out. So we watched it. Now, I don't want to give away a little too much. Overall, though, I mean, I did enjoy it. It's the acting is great. I mean, it's Joseph. The kids are like good for kid actors.
I wouldn't say they were fine.
They were fine, but they weren't like amazing.
It didn't come off like I don't know, some kid actors, you're like, yeah, clearly someone is like helping you. Like they, it felt genuine.
Yeah. It's kind of like sometimes a kid, you just have to make sure you are a kid.
Yeah.
But I mean, you got, oh my goodness, Jason Robards and Jonathan Pryce in there carrying things. And even the rest of the cast did really good. But I mean, they're, you know, these are high caliber actors. So, I mean, you got some really good acting going on in this. So it was really good. The tone of it was good. The effects are dated, but they still worked. And like one thing I noted that was kind of different in the radio version and probably, I guess, in the book is you kind of see when the train comes into town, the statue's kind of breaking apart with this weird red effect in the movie. In the radio thing, I think it talks about them just they crumble to dust or something. Because like angel statues don't want to be around. So that's, I think, where it's a little bit of a confusion for me in the movie that I wish maybe they shouldn't let Ray Bradbury do it the way he wanted to. I think that might be the problem is they kind of refer to them as the August people and they don't really get into, well, who are they? Like they seem like they recycle. What's really going on? And you get this idea that, OK, they thrive on misery. But, OK, well, how come they're doing stuff to make people happy? And the only person who that we see that, oh, well, you got, it's not so great is the teacher who gets her youth and beauty restored. I think she gets blinded in the movie. We don't see what happens to everybody else who gets their wish. They seem perfectly content with it. So it's just like it felt like I didn't get how everybody was miserable other than her, where she's like, oh, her wish that she got granted kind of backfired. I kind of wanted to see everybody else's wishes backfiring.
Well, you kind of have. So the guy who really was into ladies, like he became a lady, like he became the bearded lady and was like,
well, yeah, I guess. So. I mean, I thought he was just fancy. He reminded me of like a King Herod in a Bible movie.
Well, he was kind of trapped in the carnival and the same way with the guy who really loved money. You know, he kind of became, you know, he's a cigar person and they have, you know, the Indians that are outside, you know, like that's what he became. He became trapped. They got what they wanted, but they became trapped in the carnival.
Yeah, they became part of the carnival.
And even she did too, like, you know, nowhere to go after she's had her transformation. So that's what I gathered from it. Like even as the train's coming in and you hear this whistle, it sounds like souls
screaming,
crying.
That was really good effect.
And moaning.
Yeah.
And I didn't care of the you know, it's attacking the angel statues and I was fine with no explanation. Like it's okay for me to have something creepy happen and they don't have to explain it. Like obviously these are the bad guys. Angel statues represent the good. Yeah, they're gonna attack it and that's fine. And I did like that, you know, yeah, you're gonna get what you want, but you're not gonna like it. Like you're gonna become trapped with us forever.
The radio version that I heard was a little bit more specific and it seemed mainly what they would do is they were altering your time. So the merry-go-round that you see in the movie seemed to be the key factor. At least from the radio version of as much as it was adapted in, where like, oh, you wanted your youth back or this certain thing happened. They didn't have the character that in the movie that was, you know, he had been a football player, then he'd lost an arm and everything, which I'm guessing might have happened in like World War One or something. I don't know for the time. It must have been an accident or maybe he was in a war. I don't know. They don't really tell you, but you're just kind of fear. Well, something happened. He must have been an accident or something. I don't recall him actually being in the radio dramas. They don't really get into the details of some of the other characters, but it seemed like they focus on, oh, well, we put you in the merry-go-round and it goes backward. And it literally, if you played it forward, it plays the death march. If you play it backward, it plays the death march in reverse, the carousel, which I don't know that the movie had that going on.
We'd have to watch it again and listen for it.
But that's what they comment on it. But so they could rewind your time, your personal time frame, and how they created that as misery, because they don't talk about Mrs. the teacher, I forgot her name, but they don't talk about her being blinded, but they talk about as she's younger, you can't go and tell everybody, oh yeah, I'm me. And so you get disconnected from your family, your friends, because you are not the same person that you were. And so they've created misery that way is what the radio adaption was talking about. So you're miserable and become part of the thing. You can't go back to the life that you really had. You should have been thankful for what you did have instead of wishing to have something you didn't have.
I kind of like the movie where they become trapped.
And maybe the book is better on that and explain and doing a bit more, but it didn't get into that. It seemed to treat it like the merry-go-round was everything. But they do. He does explain to him, like, because basically in the radio adaption, it was a little bit more focused that Mr. Dark is, yes, the devil himself. And there's even a scene in the movie they have where he's tearing apart a book that had all these notes in it. Just a book where they're like the newspaper records of where the they call them like the autumn people, because they always the carnival shows up in the autumn and it's come like every 30, 40 years.
I thought it was like the pastor's diary.
There's a diary. But in the radio version, it's a Bible, because there's a little Bible quoting back in it. And basically the devil's like, oh, yes, I'm quite fond of quoting this myself. And as in a scene that does mirror in the movie, he starts offering Jason Robards, his character, or the father, Holloway, because he feels like he's too old and he can't really keep up with his son. It's like, oh, I should be able to play catch with him, and I can't because I'm an old man with a bad heart. But he starts offering, oh, well, I could age back to 30. No, 31. And he tears a page out. 32, you know, because he's trying to get him to give away the location where his son and his friend is hiding. But he's tearing up a Bible, which would be something, the devil would do. But he also, oh, no, I know the Bible. I can quote that one myself. That's the devil for you. Yes, he knows it backwards and front, and he can quote it, and he can twist it. So I was like, that definitely gave him some identity. And, you kind of get the idea that the sand witch and Mr. Cougar, and I still think it's funny that she's a sandwich. Turkey on rye. And
not
Mr.
that
Cougar,
kind of sandwich.
I know, but are probably enslaved to him and were probably previous people. The one thing that I thought was very interesting, it's a big difference, and I'm going to be careful about spoiling this, but it was kind of cool. Like Joe Fury, it seemed like the radio version that I listened to kind of cut him out a little bit after he gets and he doesn't really sell a lightning rod to the boys. He gives one to him. He's like, because he goes to Jim, he's like, you particularly going to be in danger because little Jim Nightshade is very tempted to be older. He really wants to be dull, and he's really into women. Doesn't want to be a little boy. He wants to be older, but so it's like he knows, because Will is very resistant. He's a smart little boy. And so he actually gives a lightning rod. He's like, no, this lightning rod is going to have to protect your house because you're going to be in danger.
Oh,
Joe
so
Fury
get,
knows.
They give it to the other boy instead of the one in the.
No, they give it to Jim because Will didn't need one. He's not tempted.
Oh, okay.
Jim, though, was tempted. And that's like in the movie, Jim buys one from him. But in this radio adaption, we don't have any money. Says, that's okay. You really need this lightning rod to protect your house because you're going to be in danger.
Well, okay. Fury
kind of knows some things.
Let's be honest. In the movie, the kid just like grabs like basically nothing.
Some change. And he just kind of takes it.
He pretty much gave it to the kid,
Yeah, he kind of doesn't even count. It's like, you just have a lightning rod. But they also, there's a weird bit in the movie that wasn't in the radio drama. And I don't understand it. I wish it was maybe in the book, and maybe Jonathan was here to explain it. But they're kind of torturing Joe Fury and electrifying him, trying to get him to say when the next storm is coming through, because somehow another storm is a problem, which I sound like, okay, if she's going to blow away like sand because she's a sandwich, maybe that's the thing. But there's this whole thing about a storm coming, and the radio version really didn't lean to that at all. So I don't know how that actually plays. But they do have an electro kind of guy that shows up that I thought was similar to what they were doing with Joe Fury, but he's actually one of theirs, that he can fake his own death. Oh, it's all a trick. And because anybody he quote unquote kills, he can put it on the merry-go-round and he brings them back.
Hmm.
Except for here's the thing. There's a really cool moment where Joe Fury, when he gets free, he gets a lightning rod and he zaps. He doesn't zap, but he uses it to kill the sandwich. And they have a thing where
spoilers?
Lightning is striking. It's 25-year-old movie.
Okay.
But I mean, there's this really cool moment. I don't want to say how they get rid of Mr. Dark, but I'm just talking about a difference. Apparently what might be in the book because of the radio drama. There's this whole thing where happiness is what really defeats them, because they're there to feed on misery. Yeah. And so they do a thing where basically they put a smiley face on a bullet and shoot her with it.
Hmm. I kind of like the
because
movie
the happiness. It was more dramatic and plays out good in a movie.
Yeah.
Because it would be hard to go and like marking a smile on a bullet. And it's a big complicated setup of why they get to shoot her. I won't get into that. I'll let you all maybe read the book or something, but it's not in the movie. But it's kind of this cool moment with Joe Fury and his lightning rods, So, of course, there's themes of temptation and desire, because the carnival offers characters what they most long for, but at a cost, which I really think that I don't feel like it leaned into the cost very much. I wanted to see more, because like there's a really good scene where the teacher, she looks in the mirror and she sees herself getting younger, but then she suddenly puts her hands over her eyes and she falls over and is crying for help, and she's feeling around, and where you can say, oh no, you've lost your vision, so you are beautiful and now you can't see yourself. to say, oh, look how beautiful I am. Now you don't get, because that's what she really wanted one is like, oh, yes.
Well, they took the other ones at the carnival. So like, you know, the guy that really liked women, he went to go in to see like the women dancers and he never came out.
And never came out again.
The one guy won, won some money and got on the Ferris wheel with the sandwich.
And then disappeared.
And then just disappeared. Yeah. Like she took him. So like,
you see something happen to them, but you kind of wanted to, I wanted like more like how your wish went bad, because I think that there's a thing, something you could learn from it, to learn to be thankful what you have and quit longing for things like you turn into Uncle Rico and like, oh man, I could have been pro if they would have just put me in that game. You can't go live in the past of what you didn't get. Be thankful for what you do have and work towards something you can have maybe in the future. You work for something instead of just sitting around wishing for it. But you might be careful what you wish for, because you might get it and you might not be happy with it when you do, which is actually something that pops up in a James Bond theme, the one that Chris Cornell did for Casino Royale. Yeah, you can't deny the prize, but it may never fulfill you.
Oh, yeah.
It longs to kill you. Are you willing to die?
Yeah.
You know, there's a line in there. It's like that kind of fits, because some stuff you wish for, you really don't want. You really don't need that.
Well, and sometimes your wishes need to be realistic. Like, the guy who he lost his arms and his legs, and it's kind of cool that he tosses the ball around to his friends and he can still catch it and stuff like that. But, he's not going to be able to do that anymore. And now he does run the bar, so he interacts with the people, and that's fine. But again, like, he needed to adjust his dream, because sometimes the dreams that you think that, oh, this is what I'm going to, you don't have the ability to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things.
Or you're better with something else.
Field of Dreams, I thought, was really great. Because you get to see the characters kind of get there, like, oh, I didn't get to play baseball or whatever. And you have this one character in his youth that he played one game, and they find, oh, he didn't get to be a complete pro baseball player. That's what his dream was. But no, he got a new dream where he was a town doctor, and he was more fulfilled by being a town doctor in a small town and taking care of people. And there was a theme of that in Field of Dreams, which you need to watch that movie. It was really good.
I've watched clips and bits of
clips, but like the whole thing where you see at the end where he's more fulfilled by not being the professional baseball player, but by being that town doctor meant more to him. Yeah. And so you get a new dream, and sometimes it's better than what you thought you wanted.
Yeah.
God's got a purpose for you. Sometimes better than what you think you want. God's got something that's better for you if you just kind of are a bit more willing to obey, because then, he knows you better than you know yourself. That kind of a thing. But other themes, of course, aging versus youth, because Mr. Dark, of course, manipulating time, and he draws in your fear of growing older and loss of vitality, and he tries to tempt the father with it, which was one thing was funny in the radio drama is because they lean into this a little bit, and the movie didn't quite, but it goes from the idea, if you're a Christian, if you're someone who has faith, they can't hurt you.
No.
And they lean to the radio version kind of do that, because when the sandwich in the movie stops his heart, the father's heart, Jason Robards' character, in the radio drama, she's going, yes, stop. And he starts laughing. He's like, oh, quit tickling my chest. And his laughter harms her. And that's how he figures out you don't like happiness. But he's able to resist and fight back, because they can't really hurt. Now, they do wound his hand, and he has that, like what happens in the movie. But I liked that. It's like, see, that's something that should have been in there. It could be like a difference, like a person of faith, like a Christian. We don't have to be afraid of the devil. He can't hurt us.
Yeah.
He's defeated for us. Right. So I really wish that had been brought across the movie.
Yeah, it would have been nice. Like, I was kind of thinking at that time, I was like, oh, don't touch him, because like he was different than all the other people. All the other adults that they present have these longings. He did have one, but he was wise about it.
Yeah.
He wasn't chasing something that was not, he just had a regret of something that he wished he would have been able to do, but it wasn't his fault.
Yeah. And well, it was also something he didn't want it for himself.
Yeah.
He wanted it for his son. He wanted to be able to play ball with his son. And now the radio version did not have this, but in the movie, there's this really great little side story where Will had almost drowned, and he wasn't able to swim, and he got a bad heart. He wasn't able to go out to help him. Yeah. And Jim's father actually had saved him. They don't really mention Jim's father in the radio version, but they referred to him as a word that basically means he's fatherless.
Yeah. Well, and you kind of get a little glimpse of it in the movie from the way mom kind of is, and she's entertaining some gentlemen, and you kind of get the idea that maybe
that kind of screws a kid up, I think.
Yeah, that so maybe there was some, they weren't married, and he's the dad
biologically
but not maritally, that kind of thing.
We don't know who his father really was. And he's got all these stories of his father's world traveling. Probably it's all lies, kid. So, but you do have a good father-son relationship with Charles Holloway's got a good story arc with reconciliation of fear, regret, love for his son. That's a nice, good emotional core for the movie. Bradbury's tone is actually pretty lyrical, often unsettling. The film tries to capture that with fog, shadows, practical effects, and a dreamlike quality, mm-hmm. and a really cool set. So the town looked really neat. Now, some major differences for the novel. Because of studio changes and cuts, some depth is lost. Certain scenes Bradbury fought for were toned down or omitted. And I would really like to have seen how Bradbury would have rather had it. So did the production struggles show with uneven pacing, cutting, or shifts in style?
I'd say yes.
A little bit. I think it mainly showed with stuff that felt like it felt missing, like it was kind of there, but it was missing big story beats.
Yeah, I feel like in movies, and I don't mind it so much, but you can still notice that, yeah, that you can, when there's been arguments, when there's been a fight, you know, a power struggle, it shows up in the end product because there will be like a little branch that goes and then it ends, you know, or you've got this little detail that's popped in, but it doesn't ever explain, you know, mm-hmm. because you've got two people fighting for, you know, and this is not the only one that I've seen that has had that problem because there's been some kind of issue with the struggle and the and money and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, or certain movies that the script is not really done, but before they start shooting and they keep having to change things and rewrite, which is currently going on with Avengers movies. So people are kind of nervous about that, you know. So, but overall, do we think that this is going to gain a new audience of people who become fans of it? Yeah, possibly.
I think so.
I think it's worth a watch. If you have Disney Plus, go check it out. If you've never seen it, it's fun. It's got, you know, people that were kids that saw it said that it was terrifying as they were kids. I didn't find it terrifying, but I was like, oh, it was dramatic and things would happen, you know, because
I never saw it as a kid. This was my first watch.
Yeah, this was the first watch. So, you know, but I was like, oh, you know, I was still reacting to things when the kids would be in danger, mm-hmm. when the sandwich was coming after them. And when Mr. Dark finds them, and they film it really well because you just see Mr. Dark's hands coming up behind him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, he's going to get him. And he's like super strong, him and Cougar guy. And he just grabs him, lifts him right up. And you're like, oh, no, he's got him. So, yeah, it was entertaining. And it's worth watching. You know, it doesn't flow as well as maybe it should. And sometimes, but it's still very fun to watch. And will we watch it maybe again next year, you think?
I think so. I kind of almost want to watch it again this year, just some of those things that were explained, like with the, you know, the Autumn People, and they go to the dust and they come out, like, and all of that. I kind of want to hear that again because that's the explanation, and I didn't catch it all the first time.
It didn't make much sense. I thought maybe the radio adaption would have explained it better, but it doesn't really. The only one that really is dust is the Sand Witch, because she came from the Egyptian sands in some fashion or whatever, so she can. From dust you form, from dust you will return, seems to be the only thing. Because they've been alive for a very long time, and their time can be manipulated. He can turn you old. He can turn, of course, Mr. Cougar into a little boy. And that's one of the things that they thought was kind of weird. Like, at one point, he appears as the little boy as the teacher's nephew. And the two kids, when they're like, oh, because she's like, have you all seen my nephew around here? He was just here. And they're like, we didn't know you had a nephew.
Yeah, well, she says that when she comes out of the mirror, the place with the mirrors is when she's like, my nephew's coming. So it's like she was almost like prompted, like she knew, she didn't know who was coming, but it was like
they stuck it in her head that she had a nephew when she probably really didn't.
Yeah, and then that's when he comes to collect her as the little nephew.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. But they did keep the thing in there with the, although the, in the movie, I kind of like the way they played it where, when it's Mr. Cougar as a little boy, as the nephew, Robert is his name. In the movie, he's kind of giving this evil stare at the boys. But in the radio version, he comes out, he's being all nice and friendly. Yes, I'm just a little boy. Oh, it's so wonderful to meet you. And Will's the one like, you're that Cougar guy. No, this isn't a Jim. Jim, we got to go. Jim, we got to go. And that's when he goes and throws a rock through the window to get them in trouble.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the movie. It was much more sinister
scary.
When he just was staring silent. And all of that. So, this was kind of just the right amount of things were missing that you just kind of makes you think like, ooh, what could happen? And I kind of like that. I some people don't like it because it's not fully explained, but I kind of like things being not quite completely explained.
I want just enough to where at least the story is cohesive, and it's cohesive enough to where you're going to be entertained by this. So I would give it a recommendation to go and check it out. But let's go ahead. We better wrap this up.
Yep.
So, all right, I do want to remind you all about Podgagement. That is Daniel J. Lewis's fantastic company. If you happen to have a podcast and you need the tools to succeed, Podgagement is your way to go. Follow that link right there at neverlandpodcast.com. Neverlandpodcast.com is where you're going to find the home of the Neverland Network of Podcasts, which includes this show and a few others that are hopefully regularly updated by me. But that's where you're going to find Watching Movies with My Pastor, the Mighty Marvel Tooncast, and also the Moment of Truth Bible Baptist Church the sermons as a podcast right there at neverlandpodcast.com. Plus you'll find a lot of affiliate links, links to where you go, all the different websites of the different shows. I keep forgetting that I actually have built a website for Watching with My Pastor, so I can actually share the links to that one. I got to make sure I update that website too. But we do want to thank Karen Kennedy, Ricky Pope of Christian Nerds Unite, and Darren Wilhite of the Wilhite and Wall Show for their help in making the introduction. Of course, don't forget, you can email us podcast@neverlandpodcast.com. We are on Twitter or X, x.com/neverlandpcast. We're also on Facebook. We have a like page under the Fandom Nexus. Our Facebook group is still under Neverland Podcast. So I should probably just talk. You know, I usually do share stuff from all the podcasts on that particular page. And that's also where it's fun to have more interaction. I do have a poll running for what your favorite movies are to watch this season. So make sure you go and participate in that, because we're going to talk about that probably next week. Also, you can join the Neverlanders at neverlandpodcast.com, become an official Lost Boy or Pixie. And why do we have pixies? You almost get it. Girls are too clever and they don't get lost. You have to quote the book better. All right. So, you know, when you read Peter Pan, the audiobook, you didn't. I thought you did. Oh, golly, because I thought you checked it out after I did. Because I told you, oh, this was really good. Okay, well, gee, may have to correct that. I have like two copies of the book. I probably got Margaret Carey to sign a copy for me at one point. I don't know. Anyway, but you can also donate on our Patreon. You can find links for that on the website. It's patreon.com/neverlandpodcast. No copyright infringement is intended, and copyright is held by respective owners. Content is shared for review and commentary purposes only under fair use license. And now, get lost. In an adventure. We'll see you next time.